Now up 9 points. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. And as I mentioned each and every Wednesday, this Wednesday broadcast is sponsored by World Magazine. The new World Magazine is out. I spoke with Warren Smith about this last week. It was out then. It had just come out then. And this particular one deals with the idea of profiles in effective compassion. And we talked about the Hope Awards that are sponsored by World. And we talked about some of the recipients, or the, I guess a couple of them were runners-up, and we talked about the actual recipient of the award as well, a group called Horizon that's listed in this particular issue of World Magazine. And we talked about how those the issues related to Horizon was helping to show this effective compassion. And so that was certainly an interesting broadcast, and I want to thank Warren for being with us on the program last week. But there are many other issues in this current issue of World Magazine as well that are covered by the staff there at World. And one of those issues that I want to zero down in on today, and that is what I've titled in our blog here today called the Invisible Initiative. And what I'm talking about in that story or in that blog post is I'm referring to a story that was written by Lee Pitts, who is the Washington bureau chief for World Magazine. And he's written a story about the White House faith-based office. Now, it's about a year old now, at least this particular one that has been serving under the Obama administration. And so now it's about a year old, and he writes an article here about what they have accomplished, or maybe I should word that differently, what they have failed to accomplish over this past year. They've been pretty marginalized by the president and by the Obama administration. They've been very quiet on a number of the issues. And so the question is, you know, how do we think about, from a Christian perspective, this idea of having a faith-based group in a White House such as we find ourselves with now under the Obama administration? It was started, I believe, under the Bush administration, and there it seemed to be much more effective and much more of a integral part of the decision-making process of the president. Here it seems to be, in my estimation, a lot more marginalized. And so to talk about this issue today, Lee has joined us via the phone from Washington. And Lee, welcome on to the Knowing the Truth radio program again.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. You might hear a little echo today. You caught me in the Cannon office building right next to the Capitol covering a few events that are going on right now. So sorry for the echo.
Oh, that just adds to the ambiance of live radio. So we almost...
The echoes of feet you're hearing are probably either lobbyists trying to lobby something or citizens trying to get their picture taken with their lawmakers.
Yeah, since the lobbyists outnumber the citizens, typically it's probably the lobbyists.
Right.
Lee, I wanted to, there were a number of issues that we could have spoken with you about today. There's three or four I think you've written about in this particular issue of World. But I wanted to zero down on this whole idea about the White House faith-based office. Of course, right here in town, we have the former SBC president who is right here, lives right here, who served on this commission as well. And so, you know, it's kind of something that I think is on the minds of many people in this area. And I'm referring to Frank Page. Frank was the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention. He was asked by the president to serve on this commission. Tell us about this group and what has taken place with it over the past year.
Sure. Well, it's a 25-member interfaith advisory council that President Obama created soon after he was inaugurated last year. It's kind of, I guess, Obama's version of Bush's faith-based initiative that George W. Bush kind of pioneered and moved the ball forward on during his 8 years in office. And one thing Obama added was this 25-member council, advisory council, and which Pastor Page, as you mentioned, was one of the ones who sat on that. They basically were asked, in kind of an academic exercise, it's been the past year talking and debating about, you know, how to move the faith-based office forward or maybe how to change it or how to regulate it. And you had, again, people from all different faiths as well as backgrounds.
And basically, you've got a section here, one of the poll quotes. It's entitled Stuck in Neutral. Obama greets outgoing members of the Council of the Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnership on March 9th. So the gist of the article deals with the idea that they never really got much attention from the White House and from President Obama specifically. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, the Pew Research Center did a study and found that the faith-based initiative received almost seven times as much coverage in the first 6 months of the Bush presidency as it did under Obama's first half year in the White House. And you can speculation is that Obama's staff, you know, planned to kind of keep it low-key because a lot of the people that voted him in weren't too big about the faith-based office. And as a matter of fact, they rattled off an angry letter to him earlier this year saying that they wished more had been done explicitly to erect more walls between the government and faith-based groups trying to help the underserved. They said that was a violation of separation of church and state. So he's feeling kind of pressure from both sides, both the conservatives who think this is a good idea. They want to see continue this partnership between faith-based groups and the government when it comes to helping the underserved. And there's the church-state separatists who believe that it's a bad idea. So he's kind of feeling it from both sides. And a lot of the people that think it's a bad idea are the ones who voted for him.
Mm-hmm. The liberal elements are not happy, I understand, as a result of that the rules of engagement for this group have not been changed. They wanted those rules to be changed, how this group operates and what sort of influence they have in Washington and these types of things. So they're not happy. So that's kind of the silver lining of this story. But the fact is that the group just hasn't done that much, right? They haven't been really, I can't point to one issue where I could say, wow, you know, that faith-based initiative group, that really made a big difference in this particular issue. I think they were completely silent during the entire abortion debate that was taking place around the time of the health care debate, that fiasco. And so I never heard any quote come out from them. Is that a fair assessment, that they really have been marginalized to the point where we hardly ever hear about them?
Well, the people in the council would argue that their role in the council was not to be a voice of the White House or to speak for or against legislation. Their role as designed was to come up with a report, which they did, and it was done quietly, you're correct. For the past year, they kind of quietly met, sometimes in person in Washington, other times often over the phone and conference calls. But these 25 members and staffs researching for them released in March a 168-page report that they presented to President Obama. It was a nice little photo op with people shaking his hand. It was 60 consensus recommendations that this group made on how to go forward with this faith-based office. So now the question remains, this year is done. They had these quiet internal debates. They have a 168-page report in the White House's hands now with 60 recommendations. What are they going to do with it? Are they going to stick it on a shelf and let it collect dust, or are they going to actually enact some of these recommendations about how to tweak the faith-based federal government partnership when it comes to helping the underserved?
So the group, you know, they meet together. They're not supposed to take a positive or a negative view of some of these things, or at least come out against the president. It just makes me wonder, and I don't know how much you consider this. You don't go into this particular aspect of it in this issue or in this this article that you've written about here. But I was just wondering, you know, how much good does it really do? I mean, couldn't it be easily used by the president, you know, just to do lip service to listening to what, quote unquote, people of faith are saying and yet not really do anything about it? Is that what we should take away from this article?
Well, that's yet to be determined. That's probably the next question that needs to be answered over the next year. What is Obama and his White House staff going to do with this 168-page report? And that will give us the answer to that question. You know, this past year was mainly an academic exercise, and a rabbi I talked to who was on the commission, Rabbi Saperstein, said that it's kind of interesting that a President Obama, a former law professor, you know, decided to initiate this 25-member council in kind of an academic debate over religion and government, and it was mainly done behind the scenes. Those who are really interested in it should definitely read the 168-page report, which is available to the public. Mm-hmm. But and everybody I talked to from all different sides, the religious left and the religious right, those who sat on the council, thought it was a good academic exercise and constructive conversations, and they all were surprised how many areas they did agree on and how much they could come to consensus on. So the report itself is an interesting document. What happens with it is going to be the next question.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read that report. Was there anything in there that was compelling to you that you read it and said, wow, you know, they've really taken a strong stance on a particular issue here or really made a very powerful, persuasive argument for the president to act in a certain way?
Well, one of the things that struck me with the report when I looked over it is that it kind of uses a lot of broad words that, you know, like encourage, promote, create, develop, and kind of nudging the government to move forward with faith-based groups. But again, when you get 25 people and several more than 25 behind the scenes doing the research and stuff, you know, it's hard to get people to get a common ground on definitive controversial issues. So they did use kind of broad words like that. Like, I mean, everybody's going to agree that we should encourage and promote and create and develop a partnership between the government and faith-based groups when it comes to helping the poor. So when you get down to the nuts and bolts and nitty-gritty, there wasn't a lot of, like, this is how you should do this, this is how you should encourage, this is how you should promote. It was kind of broad, statements. That was one thing that stuck out at me. One thing that also was frustrating, and some of the council members from both the left and the right agreed with me on this, is that some of the key hot-button issues were taken off the table by the Obama administration. They initially were asked to come up with ways to reduce the number of abortions, but then once they started meeting, that was the administration officials took that agenda off the table, and they didn't let the council debate that. Another hot-button topic that they didn't let them debate was religious hiring practices. Whether you as a faith-based group, for example, a Christian faith-based group, could, you know, make sure that the people you hire share your same faith. And obviously a lot of faith-based groups believe that's crucial to hiring, is that somebody who works for you shares your same faith, but others say that that's discrimination in job interviews. So how to reduce abortions being a hot-button topic, and whether or not you can use religious beliefs in hiring somebody is another hot-button topic, and both of those were taken off the table for this group. So that kind of frustrated members on the group as well. Mm-hmm. It seems like the Obama White House wanted to kind of avoid, you know, those are the kind of topics that would have gotten them in the paper and would have gotten news probably if they had the debate on that. And it seems like the White House wanted to avoid any kind of media attention on that from this group.
Which is, when you mentioned that about the idea of reducing the number of abortions, when Barack Obama was on this program, then candidate Obama, but he was here in Greenville, and so he came onto the program for a few minutes. One of the things that he said was that nobody was pro-abortion. He said that nobody's pro-abortion, and one abortion is one too many, and that he was going to work to limit the number of abortions. That's what he felt, that it was, a decision between the doctor and the individual, and didn't want government doing it, and all of these types of statements, political statements about the issue. I should have asked him right then and there why he would be even concerned about the number of abortions unless he felt that the unborn child was actually a living human being. Because if you don't believe that, then then why would you want to limit the number of abortions? It's completely inconsistent. But anyways, when he was here, he said he wanted to limit that. I called him on it, and I said, but you have received 100% rating from NARAL. You've received 100% rating from Planned Parenthood, and that doesn't sound like somebody who is interested in, doing away with abortions. Now to hear this, that they took that right off the list, it's not surprising to me.
Yeah, well, it's that is something that hasn't gotten a lot of print, except for in the healthcare debate, obviously, the abortion issue and how to reduce the amount of abortion, which is something, like you said, Obama is for, but just hasn't gotten a lot of traction this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you quickly, we only have about another less than 10 minutes with you, Lee, and I wanted to ask you quickly just about your article that you wrote about the Tea Party that took place there on Tax Day in Washington. We're kind of speaking about, in this article, that the Christian perspective is also oftentimes, or the conservative perspective, let me put it that way, is oftentimes marginalized and not really taken seriously. The president reportedly said that he was amused by the Tea Party folks there at a meeting in Washington, that he found it amusing, and they should actually be thanking him for what he did. Tell us a little bit of your experience seeing this Tea Party and what you wrote about in World Magazine.
Well, yeah, they did. There were several thousand that came up here last week for Tax Day, and I know that Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, also kind of joked that she could see the Constitution being enacted out right outside of her office window, kind of making fun of the protesters out there. But yeah, it's a.
Well, I'm afraid I think we lost Lee Pitts there. He's actually in Washington in one of the government buildings there right by the Capitol, I believe he said, and getting ready. I know that he had to leave at the bottom of the hour in order to go to another meeting that was taking place. But I just wanted to refer, we started off by talking about Lee's article entitled Invisible Hands, and it deals with the White House faith-based office, and talking about the fact that it has survived 1 year, but it was an extremely low priority in the Obama administration. And so I guess there's no surprise there to many people. I think that, the president's rhetoric on these types of things is that he's concerned, he's interested in listening, all of these types of statements, but they turn out very often, unfortunately, to be just political speak, just double speak, where he says one thing but actually goes about doing something completely different. And I think that the American people are coming around to seeing this as being a pattern. If there's one pattern, excuse me, that has revealed itself over the past year or so, it's that one thing is said, like something like transparency, that they will be the most transparent administration in American history, and then something completely different is done. Like on the transparency issue, the something completely that is different that is done is the idea of all these backdoor or behind the door backroom meetings that took place, especially during the healthcare debate and these types of things. And so, we just don't, the president's rhetoric is not matching his actions on many of these different things. Josh, do we have Lee back on? Okay, let's go back to Lee. Lee, sorry about that. Apparently, we lost you there for a second.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't know what happened, but I apologize.
That's okay. I was just giving a little bit of a recap and basically saying that one of the items that we see with this particular administration is kind of, a both ways, have it both ways approach to these things, that there's no inconsistency in saying one thing and then doing something completely different. And I just see this on a number of different issues. The one that dealing with the office of White House faith-based office, they say one thing by having the office, but really then by not doing much with it, you're making a completely different statement. say one thing about the free speech of the American people and that he's interested in listening to what the people have to say, and then go ahead on the other side and mock the people that are out there protesting just because they don't agree. Yeah, they strongly disagree with the direction of this particular administration. Do you see that same type of have it both ways approach to the Obama administration?
I definitely see that frustration from people who are, you know, observing the Obama administration closely. What I find interesting is that it comes from both sides, both the liberals who supported Obama and voted for him, and were expecting great things from them and their progressive agenda, are a little frustrated about such things as like the faith-based office not being wiped off the map, and obviously conservatives and Republicans here are frustrated about that and see that too. But I find it, you wouldn't be surprised if the Republicans are that way, but I find it interesting and telling that some of the liberals who supported Obama are a little frustrated for the very same reasons you just said.
Yeah, they're frustrated more at the pace of the change that he is bringing about. From what I read, you know, that, for instance, he was just speaking the other day. I think he was stumping for Barbara Boxer in California. And while he was there speaking, a group of homosexual activists stood up and tried to interrupt his presentation.
Right.
They were telling him to completely repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right,
and his
right.
response was, I am going to do that. You know, so he is going to fulfill their agenda. And he noted that they were the people that had, many of the people that had gotten him into office. And he is going to fulfill their agenda. It is just going at a slower pace than what they, you know, it takes a while to completely dismantle the country. Just kidding. So he can't do everything all at one time.
Well, one thought there is, you know, trying to toe the moderate line as long as he can for the next election. But in his final 4 years, you know, all bets might be off because he doesn't face the voters again. That's one way to look at what he's doing. To put a slightly positive bent on the situation, going back to the faith-based office, a lot of the conservatives I talked to, both in and out of that faith-based council, some of them who were former directors of the faith-based office under Bush, said that the silver lining is that this office, you know, still exists, and that it could have very easily been dismantled by the Obama administration. And as one of them told me, that if this faith-based partnership survived year one of the Obama administration, then it looks like it's likely to be around for a while. So that's one good sign that it wasn't totally dismantled. So he kept the faith-based initiative alive, and some of the conservatives are giving him credit for that. Now they want to see it, you know, move forward and not just stuck in neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I just question sometimes whether it does good or additional harm to have it there and have it be so marginalized that it, in effect, it is doing nothing, you know, really to promote the issues. And then, or whether it's better just to have them come out and say outright, you know, that I'm really not interested in what these people have to say and just move on from there. But that's the debate, and so it's a good debate to have. And Lee, I want to thank you for being on the program today. I know you got to run here for a meeting at the bottom of the hour, but thanks for being with us, and thanks for the work you do there with World Magazine.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. I enjoy it. Look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Okay, man. We'll see you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Edward Lee Pitts, and Edward is the Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine. He reports on a number of issues. As I mentioned at the top of the program, he's actually got three or four different articles here in this particular issue of World Magazine reporting about the Tea Party that took place, as well as this faith-based initiative in the White House. And so you can read all of those things. You can also read a lot of these articles online. You can go out to the website, which is www.worldmag.com. And if you go out to worldmag.com, you can read some of these stories that we've been talking about today and some of the things that Edward and others there have written about on a regular basis in World Magazine. Also, out on our website, out on knowingthetruth.org, we go ahead and make a available to you the discount, a 74% discount. If you just click on that that discount, that link that's out there on my webpage, it'll take you right to World Magazine, and you'll get 74% off the cover price. And so you can get this magazine sent directly to your house. I love it. I just, as soon as it comes in the mail, I'm typically racing somebody from the house out there in order to, get to it first. But if we get to it, I love to sit down with a cup of coffee and just read through it. There's many, many things. Maybe I'll go through a couple of these when we come back from the break, just to give you a sense of what types of things are covered here in this magazine. We got to take a very quick commercial break, and when we get back from the break, we'll talk about a couple more items. I want to talk about what's coming up on tomorrow's broadcast, too. Got a very interesting interviews lined up for you for tomorrow that you may be interested in participating in. I want to make sure you're aware of that. You're listening to Knowing the Truth. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Lives are changed.
Families healed.
Direction is found.
These are some things that happen around here all the time. We're a radio station that offers answers, direction, and hope, because everything we do is founded on God's truth in the Bible. That's why when people listen, their lives are better for it.
So who makes all that possible?
It's you, the listener, who gives financially to support our programs month in and month out. So thanks for making all that hope possible.
For the thousands who listen.
Tell your friends about Christian Talk 660.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
If you're a follower of Christ who wants to study God's Word, Crossway Publishers offers a great resource. The ESV Study Bible was created to help people understand the Bible in a deeper way. It's the most comprehensive study Bible ever published, containing over 20,000 notes, 200 full-color maps and illustrations, and over 50 articles. It's also available online. The online study Bible offers some unique features, like the ability to manage your own notes and quick links to references. Check out the award-winning ESV Study Bible at esvstudybible.org.
The word for the week.
From 1 John 5:4, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith.
You're listening to Christian Talk 660.
Tony Bean from Christian Worldview Today. Is there a connection between the volcano eruption and global warming? Michael Ord will be here Thursday morning to talk about it on Christian Worldview Today. Don't miss the program. He's a climatologist. He's also a creation scientist. It'll be exciting. Be with us.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. First part of the broadcast, we talked with World Magazine Washington Bureau Chief Edward Lee Pitts about a couple of the articles that he wrote in this week's, or this, it comes out every other week, so this biweekly edition of the World Magazine. We're talking about the April 24th edition of World Mag. Again, you can read some of those out on worldmag.com. And we're just talking about a couple of the things taking place in Washington. I wanted to let you know a couple of news items and a couple of program notes. One, the broadcast is now being broadcast. The station has just put up a tower up on Paris Mountain right here in Greenville, South Carolina. And they have just put up a new tower there that is now beaming an FM signal as well. And so we're now on AM, which is a 50,000 watt station covering four states on the airwaves. That's most of the state of South Carolina, as well as parts of Tennessee, Georgia, and North Carolina as well. So there's the 50,000 watt footprint, if you will, from the AM station. Now the FM is doing a simulcast broadcast of the program as well, and that is going out on the call letters for that, or the station identification number there is 92.8. 92.9. That's 92.9 FM. And so if you may have been in an area here within the greater Greenville area, and you said, you know, I have trouble getting you guys in on the AM side of things, you know, I just don't go over to AM all that often, that type of thing. Well, here's your opportunity. You can certainly just switch to FM now and get it crystal clear out on 92.9 FM. We're doing the simulcast out there. So we're glad to have that taking place, especially for the folks right here in the greater Greenville, upstate South Carolina area. Also, I wanted to let you know that I've got a number of things that are coming up. One is we have the I just heard Tony Beam talking a minute ago about Michael Ord is going to be on his program, I think he said this week. And so Michael Ord had been on with me before. It was very interesting. He's an expert, of course, in the area of global warming or climate change, these types of things, about speaking to that issue. And so I highly recommend you listen to that broadcast and also go out to our archive file. And in the archive, you can hear the interview I did with Michael Ord about that issue. And also, I did a broadcast with Lord Christopher Monckton. And Lord Christopher Monckton was in the Thatcher administration. And I had him on the program. He's one of the leading experts, one of the most prominent speakers on this issue across the globe about speaking about the issues related to climate change. He had a YouTube video out there that just really went viral, and just millions of hits on that YouTube presentation that he had out there. And I had him on the program shortly after that. You can listen to that out on our, just go to our website, knowingthetruth.org, or you can go out to the sermonaudio.com version of the website. You can go out there and then just key in global warming or any of those types of terms, and it should take you right to those broadcasts. I also want to let you know about the broadcast that we're doing tomorrow. On tomorrow's broadcast, I entitled the blog for the broadcast, The Gospel Rediscovered and Rejected. And so during the broadcast tomorrow, the first half of the program, I will speak with Jeremy Lelick, and Jeremy is the president of the Association of Biblical Counselors, about their upcoming annual conference that's going to be held May 20th through the 22nd at Christ Chapel Bible Church in Fort Worth, Texas. The keynote speaker for that event is going to be Tully and Trevigian, and Tully, and that's Billy Graham's grandson. He's now the pastor out at Coral Ridge Church, Presbyterian Church in Florida. He's going to be addressing this year's theme called The Gospel Revolution, and talking about rediscovering the power of the cross. For the second half of the broadcast, I've asked Joe Dallas to come on with us. We're speaking in the first part about applying the gospel to our life and making changes in our life. The second half of the broadcast, Joe Dallas, the program director for Genesis Counseling in Tustin, California, a counseling ministry dealing with sexual addiction, homosexuality, and other sexual-related problems. He'll be with me on the broadcast to talk about an article that came out, a blog post from Brian Thornton, Voice of the Sheep, where he entitled it, The Gay Christian Coming to a Church Near You. Brian is writing about this idea of, you probably heard, that Jennifer Knapp, the CCM Christian artist, has come out and said that she is a lesbian, and many people are just okay with that. You know, it's no big deal. You can be a Christian and homosexual or lesbian. So we're going to talk about that on the program tomorrow. Joe Dallas has written an excellent book called The Gay Gospel. He actually has The Gay Gospel with a question mark after it. And then the subtitle is How Pro-Gay Advocates Misread the Bible. It's the best work on this subject that I have read thus far. And so he's going to be with us to talk through this issue on the second half of the program tomorrow. I was just out reading on some blogs here this morning of a number of different things that are taking place around the Christian community. And one of the blogs that I went to this morning was Feeding on Christ. And Nick Betzig, I'm sorry, Nick, you can correct me if I'm not saying that right. We will talk to Nick here in just a second. But Nick wrote about the fact that N.T. Wright had just did a lecture at Redeemer Presbyterian Church, and he writes an interesting article about what took place there. Redeemer Presbyterian Church, of course, the senior pastor at that church is Tim Keller, and so this is kind of getting a lot of airtime in the Christian blogosphere, and so I've just quickly here sent Nick an email and a tweet and said, hey, you want to come on real quick and talk about this subject? And so Nick has graciously done that. And so let me welcome in. Nick, welcome into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be on.
A very quick notice there. I'm glad I caught you at your watching your Twitter tweets. So tell us a little bit about what you wrote out on feedingonchrist.com and what you're writing about related to N.T. Wright's lecture there at Redeemer Presbyterian Church.
Sure. As a minister in the PCA, we in the Presbyterian Church in America, we really have had to watch the whole development with the new perspective on Paul, and also, which is related but a little different, the federal vision theology and how it's really come into our churches, many of the churches in our denomination, some of the seminaries, Reformed seminaries, some of the professors have, you know, been teaching N.T. Wright, and I mean, across the board, N.T. Wright is probably the most popular theologian in Christendom in one sense. I mean, he's been, you know, New Perspective on Paul's huge, and it's very disconcerting. I mean, the PCA, we have a standing judicial committee that drafted a report that basically said that the New Perspective on Paul teaching on justification, specifically justification, is out of accord with the Bible and with our Protestant confessions and creeds, specifically for us, the Westminster Confession of Faith. And so about a month ago, it was called to our attention that Wright was going to be speaking at Redeemer New York's Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York, where Tim Keller is pastor, at their Center for Faith and Works, which is a sort of it's a ministry. Their website says a ministry of Redeemer Presbyterian Church. And I think this raised some red flags for a lot of us who are thankful for Tim Keller, thankful for his ministry. We don't think that he is New Perspective or teaching it. But I think the question a lot of people had was, how is this not an approval of Wright? Now, you know, this is difficult because many of us would say that N.T. Wright has done many, has written many good things, helpful things. The problem is, if you look at a man's theology and how every part really does tie into his system, and N.T. Wright has really, in my opinion, perverted the doctrine of justification by faith alone, that, you know, we need to be very careful what we approve of that individual. And certainly having him come to speak at a church-related function is a very concerning thing. So a ruling elder actually, and I'll just get to this real quick about the post, a ruling elder in New York City in a daughter church of Redeemer actually wrote me and said he would be at the talk, I think it was yesterday, and so I thought he wrote a very charitable and yet wise review of the talk. I think he gave Wright the benefit of the doubt as far as what he was saying. He certainly wanted to clear any suspicion that Keller is teaching Wright's view of justification, but he ends the post with some major concerns that, you know, the way he was introduced as a brother who's laboring for the gospel by a pastor in the PCA there in the New York Presbytery, that his books were being sold there, including his books on justification, and that there was really no caution or warning. And so I think that really does concern a lot of us.
You know, on that too, Nick, one thought that comes to my mind, Redeemer is a PCA church, is it not?
It is, yes.
So here it is in the same denomination that went to such great pains to address this issue of the New Perspective on Paul. And I think that there was, if I remember right, I had Guy Waters on the program and we talked through this issue. But if I remember right, wasn't there a seminal moment at the Presbytery meeting where R.C. Sproul rises to the floor and gives an impassioned plea for the gospel and against the New Perspectives on Paul? That's all within the same denomination. It just seems a little bit of slap in the face would be too strong of terminology, maybe, but it just seems that when somebody within the same denomination, then knowing what they've gone through on this particular issue, goes ahead and invites him to speak at this conference, it just is a little bit more aggressive. Do you agree?
Oh yeah. Well, I think it's sort of telling of the temperature of the PCA. We're a good denomination in many respects. One of the most biblical denominations in America, for which I'm very thankful, and yet we have a great diversity of opinion, and certainly don't have any uniformity of adhering to the same things, having the same concerns, and that's what makes this hard. I mean, Tim Keller preaches a very clear forensic justification by faith alone, and yet, you know, there are men in his own church and men in that presbytery, as in many presbyteries, who love N.T. Wright and love reading N.T. Wright, and how much of Wright they appreciate and how much they're critical of is hard to say, but what we're seeing is that there's real no care in guarding the people of God from false doctrine, which mm-hmm. is what, you know, I certainly believe that Wright is teaching false doctrine with regard to justification. I know a lot of other brothers, including R.C. Sproul and the men that were on the SJC. And so this is a very difficult issue. You know, it's disconcerting mm-hmm. that you know, we're not more unified on the dangers of new perspective. I do want to say one more thing that there are a number of men, and recently several men that have actually left PCA churches and other Reformed Presbyterian churches who have become Roman Catholic. Mm. And there's five or six guys that are out there, and they're writing on a blog, and I can't remember the name of it right now, and I'm sorry, but we were going to have a debate on Christ the Center with some of them about some of the issues between Protestants and Roman Catholics, because they've left Reformed churches to go to Rome. And I wrote one of the individuals and said, would it be fair to say that all of you were reading N.T. Wright when you left Protestant yeah. churches to go to Rome? And he said, that would be more than fair to say.
Oh, really?
So the
wow.
fruit of this is fairly evident. Wright is an Anglican, ecumenical, and his doctrine of justification is much more like a Roman Catholic doctrine of justification than obviously what we believe, mm-hmm. faith alone.
Inherent righteousness versus imputed righteousness, I think, is what it would come down to, that you can gain your own righteousness by your religious activity in some sort of acceptance with God on that basis, rather than being in desperate need of the imputed righteousness of the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, it makes me wonder, a couple of questions here, Nick, and I've got another caller right behind you, and I'm going to get him on and keep you on at the same time so that we can respond to his question. But do some of these guys get too big to fail? You know, we're talking about some of these programs and banks and different things in our society today, and we say, you know, some of these things get too big to fail. They're we can't deal with them once they get successful or to a certain size. Do you think sometimes this is happening within the Christian community as well? Tim Keller is extremely popular. I would imagine that some of that comes into play with the presbytery now. I mean, wouldn't this be a case where the PCA would address this to him? You know, hey, we spoke out against what this man, N.T. Wright, is speaking about, and then to have you bring him to your forum here, you know, and do lectures there goes against what we've been saying, especially because you didn't give any warning about him or any clear statement of separation from him. Do you think then that, you know, there's a sense in which some of these guys get a little bit too big to fail?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough question to answer. I mean, I think certainly the superstar nature of guys like Tim Keller and even Ligon Duncan and in our own circles, men that, and R.C. Sproul, and then, you know, in the Baptist world, John Piper and Mark Dever and Mark Driscoll and D.A. Carson, these guys become such huge figures that what I think what happens in that culture is that a lot of politics comes in because, and this is why I think I am Presbyterian philosophically, because it means that no one really has more of a vote than anyone else. Mm-hmm. We're governed by a plurality of elders, and yet practically, and I think just because of the fallen nature of man, as men who are very bright and very gifted become, get into a place of status. And I'm not saying they've sought that.
Right.
Many times it's just because, in God's grace or for whatever other reason people have begun following them. It really creates a very difficult political situation, and it's sad, and it's hard to figure out what to do. And I don't think anybody's gonna, do anything about the fact that they had him there.
I've been reading Counterfeit Gods, and it's very well written so far.
I think
it's an excellent book of what I've read of it so far. And so Keller, obviously is a very gifted writer, very gifted speaker.
Yeah.
But again, we just get into these areas where we have, where now nobody, like you say, nobody may even say anything other than the Christian blogosphere. Nobody, Presbyterian is designed for these particular reasons.
Exactly.
So that they can keep things in check. But the truth be told, because of the popularity and everything else, he may just get a pass on this particular issue. Another thing, I just wanted to, this brings up a little bit bigger issue. And John, I'm coming to you. Hang on there, brother. Another bigger issue is just the idea of separation from brethren that teach, now in this case with N.T. Wright, another gospel, but in another case that's been in the news, with John Piper inviting Rick Warren to come speak at his Desiring God, here we go with the same issue again, somebody that the church has spoken out strongly against, these types of things, and yet we get somebody that we esteem, then kind of putting a stamp of approval, if you will, and it deals with this whole idea of separation. Just speak to that a little bit, if you would, and then we'll go to John and see what's on his mind.
Sure. I mean, I think the whole idea of separation in a formal sense is very difficult, and I know listeners in Greenville are going to have a variety of opinions on that. But all I can say is I, as a minister of the gospel, have to be super careful who I endorse, what I teach, what I promote. I mean, one of my primary callings is to shepherd the flock of God that he's purchased with his blood, and to make sure that they're reading good things and making sure they're not eating false doctrine and following false teachers. I'm not saying Rick Warren's a false teacher, but I certainly wouldn't want my people drinking from the wells of his writings when there's so many other good and wise men.
Mm-hmm.
I would not promote anything N.T. Wright has written, no matter how good people rave about his book on the resurrection, because I don't want people reading him on justification. And, I think the big thing is, as ministers of the gospel, we have to be very careful who we promote, mm-hmm. because if other ministers are being led astray by men like N.T. Wright and other men, then how are the people going to be discerning?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And like you say, some of these things are they're compelling writers. They write well, and sometimes we've got to guard our people. We've got to the gospel.
We've been
given the deposit of the gospel in the Church of Jesus Christ, as it's spoken about in Timothy. And part of our responsibility with protecting the sheep is also guarding the gospel and the purity of the gospel. And in these particular cases, these folks have certainly, in N.T. Wright's case, very much so, spoiled the purity of that gospel message. And so the other case with Warren, I think, would deal more with methodology. Let's go back to the phone line. John's been patient. John, you got a question or a comment today?
Nick, first off, Kevin, thanks for having Nick on. And Nick, you are a courageous young pastor. What you have just said will make you very unpopular if this ever gets out.
Oh, I'm sure.
Really, I mean, very unpopular. It is so unpopular to be critical of, say, Tim Keller or Mark Dever or D.A. Carson or, say, John Piper or Chris Blomberg, and I can go on and on and on. And with regard to Keller, you mentioned men getting a free pass and his book Reason for God. And also N.T. Wright, I would argue that fundamentally they're off on their view of the authority of the Word of God, because they've compromised Genesis 1 to 11, especially with Keller, because he has such a large audience. And I just read his Reason for God, and brothers, I was horrified. This is all the rage on the college campuses. And this man is under very little scrutiny, and he has undermined one-third of human history and one-third of biblical history. And so anytime you take on these guys, you're in big trouble. And I just say that, you know, the ground zero is the authority of the Word of God, and right at it or above it is justification by faith. Mm-hmm. And I just laud you, mm-hmm. Nick, for coming on the air and saying something that may very well end or limit your career in the PCA.
Well, thank you very much, John, for sharing those comments. And I haven't read Reason for God, so I can't respond to that. As I was just saying, I'm just really now becoming acquainted with the writings of Tim Keller and reading through that book that I mentioned earlier, Counterfeit Gods. Nick, would you take a moment? John had pointed out your writing and your blog. Nick and I met the other day at the PCRT conference in downtown Greenville at Second Presbyterian Church, where Rick Phillips is the senior pastor there. They hosted the Philadelphia Conference on Reformed Theology, and Nick was there blogging, doing some live blogging of the event. And Nick, point out a couple of the resources that you are participating in, Feeding in Christ, on Christ, and others that people can go to.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kevin. I blog at Feeding on Christ, and that's feedingonchrist.com. And that is part of a bigger sort of village green called the Reformed Forum, reformedforum.org. And I think that the centerpiece of what we try to do there is very much what you're doing, probably on a smaller scale. We have a podcast called Christ the Center, mm-hmm. And that can be found at reformforum.org/CTC, Christ the Center. And we've interviewed Keller. We've interviewed lots of men in our own circles, predominantly Reformed Baptists and Reformed Presbyterians. We want to promote good theology. We want to proactively promote things that we think are beneficial. We try not to be too polemical. We had Guy Waters on. Guy is a friend of mine, and we've had Guy on to do a critique of N.T. Wright's reply to John Piper. We did a two-part interview with Guy on that. Mm-hmm. We've critiqued the Federal Vision. But we try to be more proactive in getting good theology out. There's so much good theology, so we really do want to promote that. And so thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell your listeners about those.
Hey, I got to tell you something funny that happened at PCRT the other day. I have a little mobile recording device, just a little digital recorder. I played yesterday on the broadcast the recording that I did at the Together for the Gospel conference. So when you and I were there at the PCRT up in the balcony, I had taken out the recorder and thought, you know, I should record one of the sessions of the singing that was taking place there at the PCRT. Completely different from the singing that we hear at Together for the Gospel, but nevertheless, excellent singing. And right. So I have a recording of that. In fact, I'm tempted to play it on the way out of the broadcast here today. But while I was sitting there, I had the microphone. I just had put the hymnal over the top of it so that the microphone was going out underneath, but it didn't catch any of my voice then as I was trying to sing along and still capture the audio. Well, our good friend came in there at the same time, Gabe Floor, right. Ran back up into the balcony there, and rather than going into the pew he was sitting in, came and stood next to me. And so he kind of pointed at, like, what verse are we on? And before I could tell him that it was being recorded, he was bellowing out next to me. And so I have that on the recording.
That's funny. Gabe's got a loud voice. The singing was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought it was really,
just,
you know,
different than Together for the Gospel. You know, they had Bob Coughlin and no organ, you know, but they had just a piano there. But I thought it was very good as well. I enjoy both types of singing, and so I thought it was excellent.
Sure.
But maybe I should play that. What do you think on the way out, and then we'll just embarrass our buddy Gabe?
That's pretty funny. I think you absolutely should do that. Gabe is a good friend and needs to be embarrassed.
I'm going to do it right now. We'll see if we get to it. We'll see you tomorrow on the Knowing the Truth.